Chapter 16. I left the Great Hall and made a beeline through the castle toward Harold's chambers, with a million thoughts running through my mind. Ever since Cid explained how she'd been under the Baron's employ fairly recently, at least within his reign, my burgeoning suspicions of him had raised like the hackles on a dog's back. There had to be some connection, something I hadn't discovered just yet, but I was going to make it my mission to find out. Even if the Baron wasn't directly involved, he must have had some small inkling or lead that could point me in the right direction, so I also really wanted to meet his so-called soothsayer at some point. Whoever kept the Baron in the loop seemed to constantly have all the intel, and I wanted to know how and why. I was almost positive that the soothsayer would be the one to hold all the information that would aid me in my quest to help the girls, and I was definitely glad I hadn't mentioned either Amber or Cid to the Baron just yet. I didn't want to give away anything that might put me, and therefore the girls, into immediate danger. I pulled myself out of my reverie when I found myself at the quartermaster's chambers, and I knocked on Harold's door and then waited for the old guy to heave it open.
"James, my boy,"
he said as he ushered me quickly inside.
"A pleasure to see you again. What can I do for you?"
"The Baron's given me another quest," I explained, and I watched Harold set about making himself yet another cup of tea, brewed from the same weird tubular contraption on the first table in his lab. He didn't offer me a cup, though, and I figured he must have finally figured out I'd always turn it down. I grew up in Brooklyn, so coffee was always more my speed, so I would have turned down normal tea most times, let alone whatever the hell it was the old quartermaster brewed in his meth lab-looking contraption.
"Is that so?"
Harold raised his bushy gray eyebrows so he could study me as he took a long sip of his steaming drink.
"What exactly is your new quest, then?"
"I'm going to go after the evil mage that's plotting the Baron's demise," I said with a casual shrug. "Apparently the soothsayer has claimed the mage resides within the dungeon in the hills, and I was hoping you had more information."
"But of course,"
the quartermaster nodded quickly.
"The soothsayer explained it all to me last night. In fact, but I'm almost surprised the Baron picked you for this particular quest, I must admit."
"Why's that?" I asked curiously.
"Well, you are a monster hunter, are you not?"
Harold confirmed with a shrug of his spindly old shoulders.
"The Baron has bounty hunters in his employ for the less-than-savory targets."
"Maybe this is his way of giving me a promotion," I grinned. "He even agreed to pay me double."
"Did he now?"
The quartermaster nodded thoughtfully, and then shrugged as he brought himself out of his thoughts.
"Well, congratulations, Sir Miller. So, the mage."
"Okay, tell me more," I said. "What should I know?" I listened intently as Harold relayed everything the soothsayer had told him, and I worked to keep my expression neutral. The only things Harold knew for sure were that the mage had taken residence in the dungeons beneath Hatton, and made it increasingly clear to the Baron in various different cryptic ways that he intended to find a way to dethrone him. And if that meant killing the Baron, then so be it. That's why he needed stopping at all costs. "Okay, search the dungeon, kill the mage, come back and collect my reward." I nodded and then shrugged. "I can do that."
"I have a replenishment for your potions right here."
Harold quickly handed me two vials, one of the strength enhancer and one for the blink ability.
"And I have something extra."
"Extra?" My curiosity spiked at the mention of another boon.
"The dungeon is barely mapped, and we have no idea how huge it actually is. You'll have to search on foot to find the mage, but once you've succeeded in your quest and want to return, well, if you do return, that is."
"Thanks for your vote of confidence, Harold," I muttered under my breath as I watched the old man rifle through his stock cupboards.
"Oh, just being realistic, dear boy."
The white-haired man waved a careless hand and snorted as he finally found what he was looking for.
"Ah, here it is."
The vial he handed to me was filled with a swirling liquid that looked almost exactly like the portal in the back of my closet. It was a warm golden color, like bottled sunlight, and it moved constantly, much like the dungeon portal that acted as a gateway between worlds. "What is it?" I asked.
"Think of it as an enhanced, one-way, one-use version of your blink ability there,"
Harold quickly explained in an eager voice.
"You'll need to drink all of it for it to be effective, hence why it's single use. But should you emerge victorious, I imagine you'd rather do without the trek back to the castle, hmm?"
"So, if I drink this, it'll teleport me right back here?" I confirmed as I pocketed the tiny vial of gold liquid with a grin.
"Precisely,"
Harold smiled widely.
It still works on the basis of subconscious direction, which is why it can't be used on the first trip to get there. It will only work if you can see in your mind's eye where it is you want to go.
Okay, I understand. I nodded. Like a quick travel option, got it. I said farewell to the kindly old man and left the Baron's castle behind, as I set out on my biggest quest yet. And when I left the grounds of the Baron's castle, I noticed the marking on the back of my hand was steering me to my destination. The tiny dial on the top of my wrist flickered eagerly above the southernmost point, and I turned on the spot until I was standing in the right direction and then headed toward the hills. Maybe there's another entrance to the dungeon, I said to the girls as I made my way through the bustling market town, like the one Amber and I found before.
This would be my guess, too.
Amber agreed in my head.
If your compass is telling you the way, I say follow it,
Sid said decisively.
It stands to reason that it would lead you to the entrance, first and foremost.
Though, once we get inside again, it'll all change around, no doubt. I sighed as I left the town of Haddon in the distance and made my way into the tightly packed woodland on the hill that overlooked it.
I wonder if the dungeon stretches all the way out to the coast?
Amber mused.
It's not a vast distance from here, just where the river comes out.
It's certainly a possibility, I replied as I grabbed at a tree trunk to help myself up a particularly slippery patch of fallen leaves. If the dungeon stretches on for as much as the hill does, then sure.
I've never seen the ocean,
Sid suddenly said with a wistful sigh. You've never been to the coast before? I asked as I trudged through the forest.
Not that I can remember,
Sid admitted with a hint of sadness in her voice.
I feel like I have maybe a really faint memory of the smell of the ocean, but nothing concrete. Not for years and years, at least.
I'll take you for real one day, I promised her as I kicked a cluster of fallen branches and watched them tumble out of my way, much to the annoyance of whatever small animal was skittering around beneath them. You too, Amber. We'll make a trip out of it.
I like that,
Amber chuckled inside my mind.
From what I think I can remember, I enjoyed it when I was there last.
The beach is great, I assured her, though I don't think the East Coast and the Atlantic Ocean really constitute a beach vacation. We'd maybe need to go a little further afield than that.
Whatever you say,
Amber said with a hint of confusion in her voice, and I remembered she had no idea what the Atlantic or the East Coast for that matter even meant. I forget sometimes you're not from my world, I chuckled. There's so much to show you. Hell, it overwhelms me, let alone how it must overwhelm you.
It's a good type of overwhelming,
Amber promised me.
And I know Sid would agree too. It's mad and chaotic, but it's yours. That's why it's special.
It is special,
Sid said softly.
It's yours.
I smiled at their words and continued on my trek through the Haddon Forest. I made sure I kept to the compass on the back of my wrist, and I followed the steady flutter of the needle that would surely lead us to another concealed entrance to the huge stone dungeon. The autumn day had actually turned chilly, and I could barely see the sun anymore, let alone any blue sky behind the thick blanket of fluffy white clouds that now covered the air above me. The cloud cover kept the sun from really reaching the earth, so the mild fall breeze ended up feeling pretty cold. Sid's pauldrons acted as some sort of protection against the wind, but it started to really pick up when I'd walked for an hour or two. The clouds had been stained with a mild gray color, and a light rain started to drizzle continuously down through the red and gold leaves above me. I'd been stuck on a steady incline for what felt like forever, and my calf muscles started to scream at me by the time I finally reached the ridge in the forest. The muddy slope of trees gave way to a sudden clearing filled with nothing but moss and dirt and the odd bunch of wildflowers, and it would have been completely nondescript if it hadn't been for the dilapidated stone well nestled into the forest floor in the center of the clearing. I'm gonna have to go down that well, aren't I? I sighed heavily as I came to a stop beside the small stone structure and caught my breath after my hike. The well looked old and disused, since the circular stone was partially crumbling and covered almost completely in a thick layer of dark green moss. There were even a few clusters of mushrooms that had sprouted from the stone itself, with red hoods and white dots just like the toadstools out of fairy tale books. The broken wooden bucket swaying in the middle of the opening had certainly seen better days and was almost completely rotted through the bottom, but the rope that held it there looked suspiciously new. It was barely even frayed, and the braid didn't carry any of the greenish-gray coloring that would have made it look the same age as the rest of the well. At least this should hold me, I said as I gave it a hard tug. The rope swayed and hit the sides of the well as I moved it, though I couldn't see how far down it actually reached. I looked around my feet for a loose stone and chucked it into the opening. But I didn't even hear a splash, just a dull clatter as it hit the bottom. "Amber, fire up one of your arrows for me," I told the redhead as I pulled her bow back off my back. I took a slightly awkward aim before I let the arrow loose, and the redhead's firepower lit the inside of the well for a brief moment like a flare, before it clattered against hard stone at the bottom and went out. Okay, no water and maybe only a story deep. I shrugged as I peered over the edge. I can do that. I quickly slung Amber's bow back over my shoulders and hoisted a leg over the side of the well. The strong rope attached to the bucket was also attached to a thick iron ring embedded into the side of the stone well, and the knot had been tied by someone who definitely knew what they were doing, because it was a series of complicated loops that I probably couldn't have untied even if I'd wanted to. I let both of my legs dangle into the abyss and gave the rope a sharp tug just to check one last time before I eventually lowered myself into the claustrophobic stone well. Even though the well was dry, it somehow smelled of old, stagnant water and moldy leaves, and I had to hold my breath as I lowered myself down the rope. It only took a minute or two for my feet to touch the ground again, and I let go of the rope so I could catch my breath away from the putrid stench. "What is it with this dungeon and smells?" I groaned to myself as I looked around at my surroundings. Swamp witches and blood flies and now moldy old wells?
"Yeah, I'm kinda glad I'm stuck in here with Sid,"
Amber laughed.
"At least we don't have to smell what you're smelling, James."
Sid giggled in agreement.
"You poor thing."
"You can poke fun at me all you like," I joked. "You've no idea how bad it is down here." It was dark as night in the bottom of the well, though the moment I dropped down to my feet, I'd felt the air suddenly expand, as if I was standing in a room at the bottom. "Amber, could I borrow your firepower again, please?" I asked with a grin as I pulled one of her arrows out of the quiver again, but this time I held it in my fist like a torch, so the arrowhead was pointed vertically upwards. "Give it a good strong burst for me."
"Coming right up,"
Amber said determinedly, and then a split second later the arrowhead crackled and erupted into flames that eventually settled, like a giant matchstick.
"I'll keep it lit as long as I can, but no promises."
"Thanks," I told the redhead as I peered in front of me at my surroundings. I was definitely in a whole other part of my dungeon, and I certainly hadn't ever gotten this far in my explorations previously. I could tell I hadn't purely just for the fact there were no helpful torches nailed into the wall to help me see my way, so to err on the side of caution, I pulled Harold's potion out of my pocket. I gave myself a good measure of both the strength potion and the blink ability, and I shuddered as the magic spread through my body before I continued on through the dungeon. The air in the bottom of the well felt as if it were thinner in my lungs, like I'd climbed halfway up Mount Everest, and I cleared my throat as I peered through the darkness. There was no multiple choice in the small chamber I dropped into, and the only opening was a tight archway that led off into another random tunnel, so with a shrug, I pushed deeper into the dungeon. It was eerily quiet, even more so than usual, and my footsteps echoed loudly against the cold stone with every step I took. Amber's fire arrow flare eventually petered out into nothing after about 10 minutes, so I pulled a fresh arrow from the quiver, which she dutifully lit all over again for me. The tunnel stretched on endlessly, with every stone looking the exact same as the last, and I wondered how long I'd trekked through the dungeon. I must have been real deep within the hills above Haddon, and the air became thinner and thinner the further through the dungeon I pushed, until it got to the point where my breathing was legitimately labored. "What the hell is this?" I gasped and cleared my throat again.
"What is it?"
Sid asked fretfully when she heard my hoarse voice.
I can't keep this fire going,"
Amber groaned in my mind.
"It's like there's something snuffing it out.
Or stopping it from lighting altogether," I huffed. "There's no fucking air in this tunnel."
"But that can't be an issue,"
Sid reasoned.
"That's never been an issue before."
"I can see something ahead," I said in a throaty voice. "You see that? It's glowing." I pointed directly in front of me where the darkness seemed to stretch on for miles, but I was sure I could see something sparkling, like an orb of light, similar to the electrical staff the Swamp Witch had carried, except it wasn't yellow in color. It had a purple hue to it, and it didn't spark like the electrical power of the witch's staff. It glowed brighter the closer I got to it, and I blinked against the mind fog that was caused by my breathlessness as I pushed on.
"That's it,"
Amber groaned.
I can't light a damn thing.
No oxygen in the air. I gasped as my breathing became ragged.
It's a spell.
Sid suddenly shouted in my head.
It's a spell or a hex or that thing is a hex ball.
What do I do? I croaked out and started to double over. What?
Shoot the damn thing!
Sid screamed.
Amber, ice it! Now, James!
Amber yelled.
Do it now!
I started to see random black spots in my vision, though that might have been due to the intense darkness surrounding me, and all I could see was the hovering hex ball glowing in the distance. I pulled Amber's bow off my back along with an arrow, but my arms felt like lead as I lifted the weapon up to my face. The arrow bounced against the wood handle of the bow as I struggled to keep it in place, and I took one last long, shuddering breath that felt like iron in my throat as I pulled the bowstring back. I blinked furiously as my eyes started to water, and I held the last vestiges of oxygen in my throat as I focused on the purple ball of magic down the tunnel and let the arrow soar. I wordlessly thanked Amber as I watched the projectile hurtle toward the hex ball, and when it made contact, the magic froze with the redhead's ice power. It clunked to the ground like a bowling ball, and all of a sudden it felt as though my lungs expanded by three sizes as oxygen filled my throat again. I gasped as I doubled over and sucked in lungfuls of sweet, musty dungeon air.
James, are you okay?
I heard Sid's worried voice in my mind, and I let out a breathless laugh. Thanks to you, I told her as I caught my breath. Hexball, huh?
I didn't think they were real.
Sid sighed.
I'd read about them when I was a little girl, in fantastical books about magic. The memory just came to me. I could kiss you right now,
Amber said with a nervous laugh. Get in line, I chuckled, still breathless. So, this mage is for real then, huh?
I'd say so,
Sid whistled.
But at least we know how he uses his magic now.
That's actually a very good point. I nodded as Amber lit up another arrow, and I walked over to the now frozen ball of purple-colored magic. It literally looked just like a lumpy bowling ball thanks to Amber's ice ability, and I kicked it with the toe of my shoe and watched it tumble against the stone floor. Let's find this fucker, I huffed and determinedly pushed forward through the dungeon tunnel. I kept Amber's bow and illuminated arrow held in both hands as I proceeded through the dungeon, and my eyes searched the gloom for another roiling ball of magic that might appear at any minute. My eyes had adjusted to the darkness enough for me to be able to now see the dungeon walls in my peripheral vision, but there were still no deviations or side chambers from the tunnel I walked through. I took this as a good thing, because it meant I couldn't possibly get lost, although I was sure the tattoo on the back of my hand would have steered me true regardless. It also meant the mage was dead ahead of me somewhere, and the very stark memory of slowly suffocating was still ripe in my mind as my footsteps instinctively picked up the pace. The dungeon tunnel stretched on, until suddenly my path ahead was abruptly illuminated. A long tongue of flame suddenly crackled in front of me, like the tongue of a serpent, and it swirled and curved in the air for a brief moment before it hurtled toward me. I had nowhere to go inside the tight stone tunnel of the dungeon, and a wall of fire was devastatingly close to me. I didn't even have time to knock an ice arrow against Amber's bow before the flames got to me, so I instinctively did the only thing I could do, which was move. I fell to my knees so I could see the stone tunnel below the fire, and I willed my body behind the wall of flames. My blink ability guided me through the fire, so I suddenly had my back to it, but another tongue of flame was already forming ahead of me, but closer this time. Shit, I grunted as I repeated the process again, and ducked down low enough to focus my blink on a portion of the dungeon tunnel ahead. It was blisteringly hot, and I felt sweat bead against the nape of my neck as I repeated the process for a third time. But no matter how much I dodged, another wall of fire hurtled its way toward me all over again. I didn't have the time to employ Amber's ice ability against the literal fire walls, so I needed to find the hex ball and fast. I blinked past another tongue of flames, but this time they brushed against my back as I passed through. Sid's black pauldrons quickly glowed red, as if they physically absorbed the heat, and I let out a gasp.
Here comes another one!
Amber called inside my head. Since I'd taken a half a second to quickly examine my shoulders and make sure I wasn't suddenly on fire. Sid had successfully protected me, though, so I turned to face the next onslaught of angry white-hot flames as they scorched and burned their way through the dungeon toward me like a freight train.
On the ceiling,
Sid suddenly said.
A few feet ahead.
I hadn't spotted it before because, unlike the oxygen-stealing purple hex ball, The fire one was almost completely white with heat, and the flames concealed it every time they appeared. I quickly blinked past the next attack and glanced down at my left hand as I teleported through the fire. The glowing blue ink beneath my skin that represented the blink ability had already started to dwindle, and I figured I had just one or two teleports left in my arsenal before time ran out. And I wouldn't have enough time to pull the little vial of potion out of my pocket to replenish it either. I had one shot, and if I failed, not even Cid's pauldrons could have saved me from the constant walls of fire. I pulled an arrow out of Amber's quiver as I readied myself for the next firewall, and I kept my grip on her bow as I slid down into a crouch and blinked past the angry eruption of flames in front of me, with the bow still held ready. As soon as I rematerialized, I knocked the arrow against the string and fired at the white-hot hex ball above me. Amber instinctively used her ice power on the arrow, and it sunk into the magic ball with a sudden thud. The hex ball fell to the ground with a dull thunk, and the flames finally stopped.
That was scary,
Amber said with a nervous chuckle.
Good eye, Cid.
I wiped the sweat from my brow and gave myself a few seconds to get my heartbeat under control. Can't wait to kill this damned mage, I muttered under my breath as I wiped the sweat from my palms against my jeans. We must be close by now.
Just be careful,
Cid implored me in a quiet voice.
She's right,
Amber agreed.
This mage has gone crazy just on his security, so he'll most likely be formidable to go up against.
No kidding. I sighed heavily as I trekked deeper into the dungeon that was hidden in the hills above Hatton. But it's like you said, the guy's crazy. I'll use that to his severe disadvantage.
What do you mean?
Amber asked as we continued through the stone tunnel. Being underestimated is a huge privilege, I said, and the words made my heartstrings pang with a memory. My dad always used to say that to me.
Wise words,
Cid commented softly. Neither one of the girls said much else, and although they didn't particularly know too much about my backstory, they could probably just sense my emotions as my dad's quote came to mind. I made a mental note to open up a little more to them, since we were so completely bonded. I lost myself in a reverie for a little while as I continued to hurry through the stone tunnel, and it took me half a second to realize I was suddenly in a much wider chamber.
I can see fire,
Amber commented. Where? I hissed, and my grip on her bow tightened.
Not like that,
Cid said with a slight giggle.
I can see it too. Up ahead. Torches.
They were right, and I could see past the small antechamber was a much larger room illuminated by wooden torches, held in iron sconces, much like the rest of the dungeon.
So, you're the brave and incredibly lucky soul who managed to make it past my defenses, then?
I heard a croak of a voice come from within the chamber, and I approached with caution. The element of surprise was completely off the table, but I could still prepare, at least. I quickly pulled Harold's potions out of my pocket again, and gave myself a top-up, so I was fully powered up to go against another magical being, and I looked down at the tattoo on my left hand as it morphed and changed while the magic flowed through my body. Then I slowly walked into the round chamber, with Amber's bow held high in my hands, and an arrow already knocked tightly against the string. I didn't answer the mage's call, just slowly rounded the archway until I was fully inside the chamber. It was a nondescript circle of a room, mostly empty aside from a group of lab desks and tables at the far end, with various potions and ingredients stacked on all sides, much like Harold the Quartermaster's laboratory. The mage himself was almost as boring as the dungeon's chamber. He didn't wear a long purple cloak with gold thread, nor did he wear a conical hat, and he didn't even have a long white beard. He was completely hairless, in fact, with a shiny bald head and a weak chin. He was round-faced and red-cheeked, and his eyes were so pale and watery it almost looked as though he'd just been crying. He wore plain black robes reminiscent of garbage bags, and he was short and sort of pudgy-looking. None of that changed the fact he had cast the hex balls that had given me a serious run for my money, so I decided to take my father's advice and not underestimate him despite his weak appearance.
I am surprised you even found me.
The mage spoke again, and his voice was somehow mousier and more frail the closer I got to him. I fixed him with a steady stare and kept the arrow knocked tightly against the bowstring. The mage frowned down at the weapon in my hand and then let out a sudden chuckle, which took me off guard so much I actually jumped at the sound.
The bow by the river, I see,
he exclaimed, and he sounded almost excited.
Now, how did you come to find that, young man?
What do you know about the bow by the river? I fired back and brought the arrowhead up to aim at his head, as if to further force my question.
"Oh, I'm sure you'd love to know,"
the mage chuckled.
"A pity you'll never find out."
I immediately let the arrow loose, not with any magic attached to it, nor with any intent other than to make the stupid man cry. The projectile flew through the air like a whip crack, but the mage just lazily waved his hand with a flourish in retaliation. The arrow did a right turn in midair and went sailing into the ground where it smashed against the stone with a clatter.
"Oh, come now,"
the mage tutted playfully.
"We were just getting to know each other."
"What are you doing here?" I demanded as I knocked another arrow and held it up to his face again.
"Fire!"
Amber whispered in my head to let me know how she intended to help should I need it.
"Same as you."
The mage shrugged casually as he clasped his hands together behind his back and smiled at me from across the dungeon's chamber.
"Fame and fortune and all the fun that goes with it."
"But what do you know about the bow by the river?" I demanded again. "How do you know I found this bow by the river?"
"I know much more than that,"
the mage said with a rueful shake of the head.
"Better yet, I know what's attached to that bow."
"How?" I growled the single word menacingly.
"Oh, such formality,"
the round-faced wizard pouted.
"Can't I at least offer you a cup of tea, perhaps?"
I blinked and then frowned at the mage, and I noticed as he motioned to a tea set, his pale eyes flickered to a table covered in an array of scrolls and letters that looked like they carried important information. "I don't make a habit of sharing drinks with those with bounties on their heads," I spat at him.
"Oh, so you mean to say you are only here for the fortune side of things?"
He laughed jovially again, but I noticed how his watery eyes flitted again between me and the table full of scrolls and letters.
"I find that incredibly hard to believe. Otherwise, I'd surely be dead by now."
I knew this mage was just toying with me for fun, and I knew the moment I demanded one thing too many, he would take great pleasure in magically making me suffer. So I decided not to give him the chance, and took my father's advice once again. I moved the arrowhead from where I had it aimed at his head the entire conversation to the wooden shelving unit behind him, and then let it loose. The arrow erupted into flames as it sunk into the old wood of the bookcase just behind the mage, and he gasped in surprise as the fire crackled merrily behind him. "Ice!" I yelled as I grabbed another arrow from the quiver, and while the mage's back was just slightly turned, I let another arrow sing through the air toward him. It sunk into his side, but before he could even grunt in response to the pain, the ice crystals danced across his body and froze him in place. It kept the bleeding internal, and I watched as the blood turned to slush beneath the ice. Then I took one last arrow and shot it square into the mage's forehead. I stood there with the bow still held high in my hand and listened to my breathing. I could hear my heartbeat in my ears. My stomach felt suddenly very empty, and my chest heaved with the labored breaths I was suddenly taking.
"James?"
I heard Amber's voice in my head, and I blinked at the sound of it. "Yeah?" I muttered as I finally tore my eyes away from the frozen corpse of the mage. "Yeah, I'm here, sorry."
"Are you okay?"
Sid asked in her soft and gentle voice. I let out a long, shuddering sigh and eventually nodded. "Yeah," I assured them, and I instinctively glanced down at my hand. Since defeating the twisted mage, my skill tree tattoo had leveled up, and now the branches twisted and snaked completely over my wrist and a little up my forearm. I shook my head with a laugh at my new advanced statistics, and then hurried across the dungeon chamber to the table the mage had been glancing toward. "Yes, I'm fine," I answered with a heavy sigh. "Let's see what information this guy really had, shall we?"
"James, it's okay to take a breath,"
Amber said to me in an understanding voice.
"It can't be easy killing someone like that, even if he was kinda crazy."
"Honestly, I'm fine. I promised them. I really am. I just want to find out how this guy knew what he knew."
"I have to admit, it's odd how he saw my bow and knew immediately what it was,"
Amber said in a morbidly curious voice.
"How would he know, unless he had some part in it, or knew of someone or something that did?"
"That's what I thought," I replied as I started to rifle through the loose pages on the table. "Though he seemed pretty damn surprised when my arrows had powers. I don't think he was expecting that."
"Then maybe he didn't quite know everything,"
Amber mused.
"He was probably just as much of a pawn in this as we are,"
Sid said in a glum voice.
But still, he could give us a lead, at least.
That's what I'm hoping for, I murmured as I shuffled through the dog-eared scrolls. Let's see if this guy actually had anything useful. Most of the pages on the desk looked like potion recipes, or scribbles I couldn't understand, so I immediately pocketed them to show the Baron as proof of his demise, and to also give them to Harold the quartermaster, who might have some use for them. There was also a group of sketches made in rough charcoal, and I found one that looked identical to Amber's bow. I also found one that looked like the sleek black pauldron Sid was attached to, and I lifted the two drawstrings up to make sure the girls saw exactly what I saw.
Oh,
Sid breathed.
Well, he definitely knew,
Amber said. There's more, I muttered as I held up a sketch of a longsword, as well as a helmet that looked like it could match Sid's pauldrons, and a dagger that looked like a magically enhanced kunai blade.
Well, Sid, we definitely got a lead,
Amber said in my mind.
There's more of us.
Even worse, I frowned as I held up a letter. The Baron is definitely connected. That's his wax seal.